Commissioner Brian Kalk, we're meeting today for an informal at approximately 1:40 in the 12th floor of the Capitol. We were supposed to start at 1:30, had some technological difficulties, and I'm joined today by Commissioner Bonnie Fetch as well as members around the table. Maybe the first thing we could do is just go around the table and just the folks sitting here announce who they are and who they represent.
I'm Commissioner Bonnie Fetch.
Chris Merle, Consumer Advocacy Staff.
Mark Grumman, Consumer Advocacy Staff.
Laura McCartan with Xcel Energy.
Dave Cedarquist, Xcel Energy.
Ilana Jeffcoat-Sacco, Commission Advisor.
Okay, thank you all. We're also joined with some other folks in the room. Once again, this is case number PU1270, and I'll start out and just ask Ilana a quick question. Do we need to do something to make sure we get all this information in the record now or at the end of this informal?
I don't know that it matters if you do it first or last, but before you close the proceeding, you should make sure that there's pre-filed testimony, I believe, and then the memorandum from staff, and then the PowerPoint should be part of the record. And simply asking if there's any objection, which I doubt that there is, and then saying it'll be part of the record.
Okay. Well, is there any objection to what has been filed by NSP or as well as the advocacy staff?
No.
For the NSP? Okay. Well, with that, do we have folks in the telephone that want to be introduced as well? Okay, for those of you in the telephone, if you could please introduce yourself as well.
Steve Wishart, Xcel Energy.
Thank you, Steve.
I'm McDonough, Xcel Energy.
Thank you.
And Matthew Loftus, Xcel Energy.
All right, thank you, Matthew. So is that it, the three on the phone? All right, well, thank you very much. With that, I guess we'll turn it over to, and like I said, Commissioner Fetch, if you have any opening comments.
I've had an opportunity to look over the documents that were given to me in regard to this matter, and I'm looking forward to hearing the testimony.
All right, thank you. With that, we'll turn it over to NSP doing business as Xcel.
Thank you. Commissioner, thank you very much. Laura McCartan with Northern States Power doing business as Xcel Energy. I'm here today just to provide an overview of the Manitoba Hydro power purchase agreements that are the subject of this ADP, Advanced Determination of Prudence, and I'd like to start by thanking the staff for their efforts in coming to the offices and meeting with the different people who do resource planning and learning about the tools and techniques that are used in that and also for their thorough analysis of this ADP. This Manitoba Hydro contract is essentially the second renewal of a long-standing power purchase agreement that our company has had with Manitoba Hydro. It's brought low-cost, reliable, and clean energy to our customers. This extension does refine the nature of the power purchase and contract provisions so that it better fits our load and our customers' needs and provides a more efficient structure for interacting with Manitoba Hydro. In my presentation today, I'll start with an overview of our new contract with Manitoba Hydro and some of the key provisions of that contract. And then I'll review the evaluation process we used to confirm that this contract extension was indeed the best alternative to serve the need that we identified and ultimately our customers. And then I'll wrap up with a couple of observations about the impact of this contract to our customers and their bills, and also how it continues and serves our strategy of a diverse energy portfolio and the value that that provides to our customers. The second slide, titled NSP System Resource Needs, gives you a view of how we look at what our customer needs are relative to the resources that we actually have on hand to meet those customer needs. This is a view from 2010 through 2025, and if I can just explain this a little bit, the layer at the bottom shows our nuclear power plant and that resource, which helps to serve our customers' needs. The blue section is the net of all of the other we call thermal resources, or coal plants and natural gas-fueled power plants that help to meet our customers' needs. The yellow section shows the power purchases that we have, long-term power purchase contracts to meet our customers' needs. And then there's a couple of thin slices of wind resources and biomass resources. So what this shows is that starting in between the 2015-2016 timeframe, this shows you the fall off and the expiration of the existing Manitoba Hydro power purchase contract.
Well, Laura, if I can just ask.
Yes.
Questions for the informal, I mean, we have questions, I assume you want us to ask them as they come. But is that same for advocacy staff? What's the best protocol for if they have questions or anything, or they'll just have their own chance afterwards? As they come up, okay.
Informal.
That's double checking. All right. With that, I just had is this a switch where you've got thermal generation as a composite of coal and natural gas that you're no longer going to break those out? This is the first time I've seen that before. And I mean, so it doesn't tell me if your coal plan is to completely, you know, go down or up. I mean, why the switch? Or is that just the first time I've noticed this?
Commissioner, we can represent this data a lot of different ways, and so we can represent it to show the breakout of coal and natural gas as well. In this particular slide, I don't have it represented that way, but there is a slide later in the presentation that does show the breakout in a pie chart form of how much of our energy is met by coal, natural gas, nuclear, and so forth. So we do have that later in the presentation.
Okay, thank you.
So the key thing here is that the red line that goes across the top shows what we were forecasting at the time, and this would be 2010, of what our customers' needs would be. And so we were forecasting some growth, and this is a representation of the peak demand on the system. We were forecasting growth. So you can see when the Manitoba Hydro contract expired and then increasing with customer forecasted growth out over the years to 2025, there's a gap there. I mean, it shows a gap. It's a clear space. We had to look at how best to fill that gap and continue to meet our customers' needs for energy and capacity. So that just kind of sets the stage that, obviously, when the Manitoba Hydro, the existing contract expired, we needed to find a resource to replace that.
How do you classify your MISO purchases in this? Would that be your purchase capacity, I presume?
The firm purchase capacity, and with the two people who are on the phone, I'll be tossing some of these questions to them. So firm purchase capacity would be long-term contracts with other energy sources. So as far as the MISO purchases, I think I might have to Tom McDonough, are you the person who would be best to answer that question?
Yeah, this is a look of a capacity need. I think Steve can confirm that. This represents zero purchases from the energy markets. So this is long-term capacity purchases as well as our own resources. So it shows nothing from the MISO market per se.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. So going to the next slide then, which is titled The Benefits of the MH, that means Manitoba Hydro Contract Extension. Just in short, we did, and I'll explain later, we did conclude that extending this contract would be in the best interest of our customers. We did negotiate a new power purchase agreement with Manitoba Hydro. In fact, there are three power purchase agreements, but they all work together. They're all interdependent. So I might say PPAs or I might say PPA, but I mean all three of them together working together. So this helps this renewal. This extension helps to meet our capacity needs beginning in 2015, helps to start filling that gap. We were able to negotiate a contract and refine certain provisions of it so that what we are procuring or purchasing better fits our load profile and our customer needs. The price at the time was competitive with alternatives, so we were able to look at securing this capacity and energy at a price that would be competitive with the next best alternative. It preserves fuel diversity, and this is a real important factor. And later on, I'll show you a pie chart where we have a variety of fuel sources to meet our customers' needs, and that's good. It protects against fuel it mitigates the potential impact of fuel spikes or supply problems or anything of that sort with one particular fuel source. This contract has a fixed price with inflation protection, so we're not going to have volatility in price here, and it uses existing transmission facilities, those that are in place to provide the contract that existed before.
Or do you get into later what is the actual cost this is going to be per kilowatt, or how would we?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Commissioner, that we do have that data.
If I could ask a little bit about the inflation protections you guys talk about.
Mm-hmm.
There's already an escalation in the prices, but then it seems like there's a sharing of any, if there's excess inflation based on some number that's trade secret, if it's in excess of that, then there's added cost that's shared with Manitoba Hydro. Is that typical in PPAs? It seems like there's already sort of an inflation piece in there with the normal escalation rate.
That's a question I'll have to turn over to Tom McDonough. Tom, did you understand Chris's question there? It's kind of an explanation of why we have that additional provision of the shared impact of inflation once it gets beyond a certain level.
Right.
Sure. I think you're right. The typical PPA is set, and then with an inflation factor, some might have it tied specifically to GDP, so there's no protection at all. And so this way, it is a fixed escalation rate, but there is a if the inflation rate went above that, there is a sharing mechanism. It's just a negotiated term that the parties came to. It is not typical in most of our PPAs, though.
Yeah, this is Steve Wishart. I can elaborate a little bit more. The inflation rate is fixed at a certain percent in this contract. I think more typical would be being indexed to a general inflation rate. So Tom was right. Typical contracts wouldn't have any inflation protection. And the cost-sharing mechanism really doesn't kick in until we get to a significant level of inflation. So we really have secured for ourselves some certainty on the inflation rate. And only the cost sharing doesn't really kick in until we hit some extraordinary circumstances.
Yeah, I guess I've seen the number. It's not hyperinflation or extraordinary in my mind, yeah. But based on the inflation we've had in the past, you probably aren't going to have any problems with this provision, which is why I didn't really address it in my memo. But I don't know,
this is a longer term. This doesn't kick in until, 15, and these negotiations started, quite a bit earlier than that. Typically, a PPA will go out for an RFP, and it's going to start in a couple of years, so it's more controlled. This is a longer term, so it's another reason this is more unique.
Okay, so that's why it was put in place?
Yes.
Okay.
Slide 4, which is titled the MH Contract Overview, just a few of the key provisions of this new contract or the extended contract. We extended it by 10 years out to 2025. This provides for capacity at the level of 375 megawatts in the summer and at a lower level, 325 megawatts in the winter. There's the potential to add an additional 125 megawatts out in the year 2021, which I think is contingent upon whether Manitoba Hydro develops more of its capacity, more dams up on the water system there. It also provides for what's called a seasonal exchange of 350 megawatts, and this works out just great. This means during the summer when our system is peaking and has the need for more capacity, we get an additional 350 megawatts on top of the numbers that I just already noted. In the winter, Manitoba Hydro is peaking and we're not, so we then provide them 350 megawatts of capacity in the winter. So each of us are meeting our needs without having to build any new power plants, so it's a very cost-effective, very resource-efficient situation.
Well, I just had a general question just for my background knowledge on when Xcel enters into an agreement with another country, if you will. What's the dispute resolution if you enter into this contract and somebody doesn't fulfill what they're supposed to do? I have no idea where that even begins.
Commissioner, I don't either, but I bet you that's a contract provision that's in there, exactly how disputes are settled. And I would think Tom, can you answer what the contract or dispute provisions are?
Those are the fact that it is foreign does create additional issues, but it's the same no matter who you contract with, the choice of law and those kinds of things. It's an arbitration clause, and the choice of law is based on the province of Manitoba and Canada for this specific contract.
Is that something that we should be concerned about, that if extended litigation, you can't meet your power needs, or is this just like, do you have additional concerns because it's another country than doing an agreement with another company? I mean, that's kind of, I guess, the root of the question. Hmm.
Right, and we've had those negotiations have gone on for as long as we've been negotiating with Manitoba. That is one of the stickier issues where it's actually going to be settled, the course of law. But as Laura pointed out, we've been dealing with Manitoba, in essence, dispute-free since since the mid-80s.
Okay, thank you.
So we feel pretty comfortable with them, and they are a Crown corporation, so they still are bound by the rules. It's just different rules than we are.
But since 1980, you've never had any major problems with any of the contracts?
No. We had informal disputes that we've worked out. Nothing's ever gone to arbitration.
Okay, thank you.
I also note that this is an intermediate energy. It's serving an intermediate energy need, which is 5 days a week, and in the summer, 16 hours per day, and in the winter, 12 hours per day. So it's not a so-called baseload, round-the-clock, 24/7 type of energy need that this contract is serving. So that's just a very high-level overview of the contract. There's a lot more detail that I didn't prepare to go into with this presentation, but there, we have a lot of people who can speak to that, again, if as questions come up or if you'd like to hear anything more about that before I move on to discussing the resource selection process. So let me just move on to that. The resource selection process, it's kind of a three-step process. We start by screening non-generation alternatives. This is just to make sure that we, it's basically a more of a qualitative approach to say we could build something, but are there better alternatives to building that? And I'll speak to what some of the things are that we look at in that first step. Once we go through that, if it still seems that none of those alternatives meet the need, then the second thing is evaluating generation alternatives. That evaluation is done with a very, it's a quantitative analysis. We use a very detailed computer model called Strategist, and I'll speak a little bit more about that, but that is running various scenarios of how to meet that need and then comparing the outcome of that computer modeling to say how does it compare in cost, performance, and so forth, and that's a real key input to the analysis and the decision.
So, Laura, are the numbers that you use, the roughly 325 megawatts is what you'd have been short? I mean, is that the previous slide gave the numbers that you share back and forth. Is that kind of the...
You know, the actual...
The numbers that you used in the model?
Well, Commissioner, what we actually used is, if we go back to slide two in this picture, of the colored picture, the red line across the top says, here's what we have to meet for... The system has to be able to meet demand that is at that red level, that line. And all of that white space below it is what the strategist model solves to fill. This gap is greater than just the amount that the Manitoba Hydro contract used to provide.
Sure.
And in fact, as I'll mention in a moment, we ended up with our extended contract actually procures less energy than the previous one does. And essentially, the difference in that is mostly made up by natural gas type of purchases. So out over the future, an extension of Manitoba Hydro meets a large portion of that gap and that need, and the remaining portion of the gap and need is largely met by natural gas.
So if you go into a contract that you have to purchase 300 megawatts, let's say, at a certain time, and you don't need it, you still got to buy it and shut other things down? Is that the way that works out?
I'm not sure. I think with the Manitoba Hydro, this is something we're certain we will need, and we will always use it.
First use, if you will.
Yeah, but there are some provisions that are kind of a take or pay, and if we want to talk about some of that, maybe we should get Tom McDonough to speak about that.
That was just in general.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. Then, moving on to slide six, this is titled Screen the Non-Generation Alternatives, and I will say that although this is a step we always go through, in this particular case, the screening didn't identify any feasible alternatives to that we would pursue, and that really is because, you know, this is a big need. The gap was 1,200 megawatts, which was Manitoba Hydro plus some other things. And we're already doing a lot with demand-side management, which is load management, conservation. So there's really no big gain to, you know, unrealized gain there. Plant efficiency gains, we have already gone through retrofits and improvements at most of our power plants, so there's really no more to be squeezed out of those powers plants, and certainly not to offset the amount of energy what the extended Manitoba Hydro contract could provide. Power purchases, that's exactly what the Manitoba Hydro power purchase agreement is. So it's not a generation alternative, but it is something that that essentially was what we looked at. And we also, you could say long-term power purchases and short-term power purchases. Short-term power purchases are really not appropriate for this sort of a great need that extends over a long period of time. If you were just buying short-term purchases, you'd be paying for it, and you'd have some risk of, is it going to be there next year or 2 years from now when you still need it over a 15-year period?
Laura?
Yeah.
No. It's my understanding that you're at least anticipating some uprates for your nuclear power plants. How is that factored into plant efficiency gains, if you could explain that?
Yes. When I think this later slide, in meeting the gap going forward, I think part of that is met by some of the uprates in the nuclear power plants. One thing I will note is that the Monticello uprate is well underway. It's not completed yet. We're still finalizing the NRC review of that project. At Prairie Island, that power uprate, we've asked for sort of a review and revisiting of whether it still makes sense to go forward with that, because there are a lot of factors that have changed since we first got approval to do the uprate at Prairie Island. Some of those factors are our customer load growth has fallen to almost zero, near zero levels. The drop in natural gas prices has made the alternative to the Prairie Island uprate actually really closing that gap in cost, so alternatives become more cost competitive. And finally, there's a lot of uncertainty around the how long it's going to take to get NRC review and when you can actually achieve that uprate. The later you achieve it, the less time you have to recoup the value of it, if you think about a 2030 maybe shutdown period for that power plant. So all of those things are in flux right now, and I don't know whether what the outcome of that will be at the Prairie Island plant.
Thank you.
I just was still kind of still hung up in this whole MISO thing. How do you define MISO? And is that you consider your market purchases? I'm jumping way to the last slide where you talk about 14%. But how do you fix what you buy on MISO into your planning process?
This is – are you looking at slide that's titled Diverse Energy Mix?
Right.
So the slide on slide 11, is this the one you're looking at, Commissioner?
It is.
Yep. Tom –
I'm just trying to figure out how the MISO is categorized or defined in what you're doing here.
And I think part of this might come from the difference in the term energy and what that means in capacity. So, Tom, do you have in front of you slide 11, which is our diverse energy portfolio?
Yes, and that is the difference. We buy no capacity directly from MISO on the earlier slide when the previous question was asked. That was a capacity look. Okay. And this slide is showing where our energy comes from. And so a portion of it does come from the MISO market, and that's a difference, the capacity versus energy.
Tom, would you mind just kind of doing just the quick definition of capacity versus energy, kind of compare and contrast, please?
Capacity is what you need in advance to meet your planning reserve margins. So it's a long-term look and what you're going to need. In, like I said, in advance, so it's your need plus whatever the planning reserve margin is, and whoever your planner is. Through MISO, we have our obligation plus we carry the planning reserve. That's capacity. Energy is what's needed on a real-time basis. So we look at capacity ensures that the energy should be there, and those are the rules. But you plan to a capacity level of a 50-50 forecast. Energy, you're going to need whatever energy actually takes place in the real time. And so by sharing in the MISO market, you're also, in the old days before that, you was always bilateral. You'd have to bilaterally purchase from separate power purchasers the actual energy. Now the energy in real time is purchased as needed or as when it's lower than existing capacity resources. And when you look at our capacity resources, some are peakers that are only used during those peak times versus must run like the nuclear base loads that run all the time. And so you're buying from the market when you can buy cheaper than running your own generation. And that's the energy look that you see on what I think you said, your slide 11.
Okay, that's very helpful, because I'm just trying to get my head wrapped around how you'd use the MISO as any type of planning factor for capacity. What I'm hearing is you never do. It's just if you can get a better deal.
You do have a planning capacity. For capacity, you certainly do. That's what it is. It's capacity. It's long-term planning. This energy look is real-time, what we actually use.
I think
you can see this one was our 2011 energy mix, where it actually came from. So we have different capacity resources. You don't see MISO as a capacity resource, but yeah. we got a large portion of our energy from the MISO market.
Understood.
Because you don't have to run the existing capacity resources in real-time when you can buy it cheaper from the MISO market.
Got it.
Yeah.
That was very helpful. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Then I think I'm on to – okay, so the screening showed that with this big of a need and a long of a time period for the need, there really weren't any DSM or plant efficiency things that could meet that need. So on to slide 7. So that was the first step of our evaluation. Then the second step is the quantitative analysis to compare alternatives in terms of what their cost would be. And just briefly, we use this massive model called Strategist. This model models our whole system, the power plants and everything in our system, our customer load. The inputs include the prices of operating certain types of coal plants and certain types of natural gas plants, and there's all sorts of data that's input to this model. And we run it over a 40-year period, so a 2011 to 2049 period. So you put in all the input, you say, strategist, run and tell me what resources should be added to meet the customer need. So you put in forecast of customer growth and so forth. So it then gives us, it's a very strong tool to identify what's the cost of doing a certain course of action, like extending the Manitoba Hydro contract, and how does the cost of doing that compare to the cost of doing something different, not extending the Manitoba Hydro contract. In this case, the least cost alternative was a natural gas combustion turbine. So it allows us to look at what's the cost of doing one versus the other. The cost comparison is based on looking at the strategist run that accumulates all the cost across our system and bringing those costs back to a single number, which is a present value view of the revenue requirements over a 40-year period. We just use straight direct cost. There's nothing put in here that represents a presumed cost of externalities like carbon or anything else.
You saw the question coming, right?
Good. Okay. I said, let's put that as a specific bullet on here. But, yeah, that's in compliance with the state requirements, so there's no extra cost in here reflecting emissions or the cost of environmental controls there. I mean, that aren't already existing in law. And then we can do different scenario analyses to test how does the outcome change if, for example, natural gas prices are higher than what was assumed or lower than what was assumed, if our customer growth is faster or lower than what is assumed in the base model. So this next slide shows you a snapshot of what the result of that strategist analysis yielded for us.
This is slide 7 for them.
Okay, slide 7. Okay, so this is labeled slide 7 for you, and let me just talk through this because there's a lot of information on here. What this shows is how the comparison of different scenarios that were run using strategist and how they compare to the strategist analysis that reflected the Manitoba Hydro contract extension. All the terms that I described earlier of that extended contract, we ran strategist with that in there, got a number. That number is the total system cost as a present value revenue requirement is $85 billion. So it's a big number. And then so that's that horizontal line going across on this chart. Just to the right of it, you see that a comparison for the next closest cost alternative to say, if you don't use the Manitoba Hydro contract extension, what else would you do? And what strategists chose is you would serve all of that need with natural gas combined combustion turbines. The cost of doing that, it was about $2 million different than the $85 billion total system cost for the Manitoba Hydro. In essence, they're exactly the same. I mean, the strategist model, and as you know, you're looking out over 40 years, you're making assumptions. It's not a precise exact number, but it's a very good indicator of what it costs to do that. So the Manitoba Hydro option versus not doing the Manitoba Hydro option and serving it all with natural gas, essentially the same cost. The next two...
You guys would build that yourselves, or you just buy that out there somewhere through...
We could do either. And I think if we were going to secure a resource, we would look at... We might go out with an RFP to see what sort of price we could get for someone building that and maybe turning it over to us at the end, or building it and us entering into a long-term purchase agreement, or us building it.
There's a question that, and we've talked about this in different venues, that I like when companies own their own generation.
Mm-hmm.
And so is there some value of owning your own generation that is figured into this model, but it's not being susceptible to buying it somewhere else?
I don't know if there's something hardwired into strategists. I mean, because I think there is a lot of benefit of owning. I mean, there's benefit that comes back to the customers if the utilities own it and earn on it in rate base. I think that everybody benefits from that. Other types of, I guess I'll just ask Tom or Steve, whoever wants to speak to that. Is there something that's within the strategist modeling that reflects benefits of ownership versus long-term power purchase approaches?
No, not specifically, but the generic units we are modeling in strategist are based on owned units, and I think we do have the first preference of owning our own generation.
Okay.
It is possible that an independent power producer, you know, might already have a developed site or has a line on very cheap units, and they could compete with our owned option. But what we model and what we prefer is the owned option.
Okay.
Okay. Was there, when dealing with the Manitoba Hydro, was it all or none? You take all this, or you take none of it, or is there a step that you could vary on?
Again, I think with the contract, there's a portion of it that is pretty fixed, and then I think there's some flexibility in there for us to do more purchases at, kind of on an as-needed basis. Yeah, and I don't know if Tom, you wanted to elaborate on that a little bit.
Right. As you stated, we're going from 500 to 350 in the summer and 300 in the, or 325, whatever the number is, less in the winter. And that was specifically negotiated because we don't have that same need in the winter, and we also reduced the must-take hours. So our current contract is 500 megawatts, where we must take the energy 5 by 16, versus we reduce that because we don't have that need, and we can fill it from the market for those hours that are cheaper. So we did look at what we needed. We negotiated different terms based on our needs.
Okay. No, thank you.
Thanks. This slide, the other thing this slide shows is the golden bars show the result of varying the assumed price of natural gas out over this time period. And we assumed a 20% higher value and a 20% lower value. And I think what's important to realize here, and the same thing with the blue boxes that show when we vary the customer load growth, is it higher or lower than what was assumed in our base case? What this shows is that the Manitoba Hydro choice is also robust. It's not something that if natural gas prices move drastically one way or the other, it would have taken it out of the money, would have caused you to reach a much different conclusion about is it a good thing to do. That's what we're looking for. I think that's what we always look for in resource plans, by doing this scenario analysis and the testing of sensitivity. So I think that the upshot of this is whether natural gas prices vary, or, you know, this just shows plus or minus 20% or load varies, the Manitoba Hydro selection is still a good resource selection and still good for our customers. The one other thing I will note, that at the time that this evaluation was before us and we had to make the decision, natural gas prices were higher than they are today. So, and that's always going to happen. You're never going to be able to predict the future. But over the long haul, the Manitoba Hydro contract is not going to have fuel price fluctuation. It's also not going to have risk of additional cost associated with environmental controls or environmental regulations as natural gas might be subject to. So that's not reflected in the numbers, but I think it's a valid consideration and observation. Before I leave that, any questions about what I don't know if I'm being totally clear on that. I did struggle with trying to be clear, but it's a really sort of a interesting analysis, and it's a great tool, and I think that it illustrates that what we're trying to find is an outcome that not only is low cost based upon assumptions that we think are reasonable, but also will survive a look at sensitivity on major factors that could swing the price of that over time.
I didn't have any questions on that, just wanted to make sure I clarified that. I found this odd a while back when I found out that hydro does not count for anything renewable in the state of Minnesota.
Large hydro does not. Small hydro does. So we do have some small hydro plants, mostly in Wisconsin, that do contribute to.
Is there any other value that you could get as a company from using this hydro by something else that would help you somewhat other place? Like if it was counted as renewable, that could help out in a lot of areas, but it's not.
Right.
Is there something else that it could benefit you?
Well, I mean, other than the value that it provides in a diverse energy portfolio, I think that's there regardless. So, the next slide.
Environmental.
Environmental, clearly.
It's immune from changes that are. There's nobody talking about changing hydro at any discussion at the federal level.
No.
That's a good point.
As far as I know. Slide 8 is the assessed competitive proposal. This is the third step of our evaluation. So the first thing is we felt, well, there really weren't other things that could meet the need. The second is we did the quantitative analysis that we think, confirmed that the contract extension is good for our customers, good long-term solution. The third thing was, well, we think it's good. Is there anybody out there that's got something better? So competitive proposals. We didn't do a request for proposal process or RFP process, but we did use something that the Minnesota Commission has defined and called a Track 2 process. And this creates the opportunity for others who might have a project to come forward and say, we've got a better idea, it's better cost, it's better, you know, whatever. And the way this works is that once we go through a certain part of the process with the Minnesota Public Utility Commission, we submit our resource proposal, this contract extension, then public notice is issued so that interested parties can become aware that they have the opportunity to provide an alternative proposal. And then they could, if they so choose, put it in, and then the commission would review that. In this case, nobody came up and provided an alternative proposal. In two other cases where we used this Track 2 process, alternative proposals were proposed. So I think this was a confirmation, and we took it as a confirmation that no one had a better solution than the extended Manitoba Hydro contract. The next slide is rate impacts. And I think, Commissioner, this was your question. It's not right on here, but I do have the data. This, we're securing less energy. As Tom mentioned, we used to be getting 500 megawatts. Now we're getting 375 in the summer. But we are paying more for it. What we're paying more for it is, I think we were paying $33 per megawatt hour in the previous contract, and we're now paying $63 per megawatt hour with this contract extension. But the net is, if you look here, the typical customer bill impact on this table, because we're purchasing less energy, there's not an added cost to customers. And there's also then not an added, within, say, our rate base, there's not an additional driver here for a future rate case, because the revenue requirements under the current contract for North Dakota were about $6.8 million per year. And under the revised one, it would be $6.4 million.
There's actually quite a savings in having the contract go from 500 megawatts of capacity to 350. That's a substantial savings, and that offsets the extra cost for the energy itself. So the bottom line is that this doesn't really create a cost increase the way the contract is structured. And as you see here, customers are going to see about a 17-cent drop in the cost, so per month, based on our analysis.
So it'll be longer until you come back for a rate case.
Well, this definitely won't contribute to another rate
case. I had to try, Dave.
The next slide is the pie chart, the colorful pie chart called Our Diverse Energy Portfolio. And I mentioned at the front that I thought that one of the values of the contract extension was that continues with the strategy of a diverse energy portfolio and all the value that flows from that. I think staff had many cogent observations about that particular point in their analysis and memo. But you can see here we've got a lot of things that we rely on to serve our customers. Coal, 34% of our energy comes from coal, 26% from nuclear. These are actual 2011 numbers. And sometimes you see something that's more sort of different time frames, but these are actual 2011. Natural gas last year served 6%, wind served 10%. Hydro, this is the small hydro that I mentioned, mostly in Wisconsin, 2%, biomass 3%, market purchases 14%, and Manitoba Hydro 5%. Now, going forward with this revised contract, the Manitoba Hydro number will be smaller. I think it's more like 3%. But I just decided to use the 2011 pie chart to show you actual data and how this fits into this diverse energy portfolio. And one other thing I'll mention, not only do we have diversity here, but the contract with Manitoba Hydro is not dependent upon a single power plant. Manitoba Hydro has 5,500 megawatts of resources, so we're basically tapping into whatever is needed there. So if any of their dams are sort of up or off, we still are confident that we're going to get all of our needs met through this contract because of the diversity of their system.
I'm sorry.
Excuse me.
What is biomass?
Biomass is these mostly trees, burning trees and stuff. I think we might have some turkey litter. Is that called biomass?
Yes, it is. And okay. Garbage.
And garbage, refuse-derived fuel. That's a little fancier term.
Okay. And market. What is involved in that 14%?
Well, every day we have our eye on the market. The Midwest Independent System Operator, there's a large footprint in the Midwest where we can kind of go in and buy energy. And we are always looking to see, is there energy available cheaper than what we could produce it at? So we have short-term, we have some longer-term purchases. That's purchasing kind of on an opportunistic basis where we can get lower price energy to serve our customers. So in that case, Commissioner, we might buy from the market rather than running one of our gas plants at a higher capacity or with more output. Tom,
that could be a number of different sources then.
That's correct. And that's probably mostly coal, but I think recently more so even natural gas, because natural gas with the low current prices has been that's been a big part of the energy mix in this region. Tom, do you want to correct anything I've said there?
No, that's correct.
Okay, good.
And so how the MISO market works, it's a bid, and MISO then goes through a day ahead. You bid in your cost, and they'll run against your load, and they will select the lowest cost options. And so if we can serve our load from the market, that'll happen automatically through the MISO process, and that's where that number comes from.
Thank you.
But it's exactly right. Our small peaking plants are very expensive to operate. You need them on these hot days when you might have to operate everything. But for the most part, they're running maybe 1% of the year, and you're taking energy from other people in the market.
Thank you.
And the final slide here is just a summary slide, and just kind of reiterate, this is needed to help us to address the capacity needs and the shortfall we have starting in 2015. It's price competitive. It was price competitive at the time. Natural gas prices have fallen since then, but their natural gas prices, I think, historically have been fairly volatile. So it preserves the fuel diversity in our mix and all the value to customers that comes along with that, and it does have a fixed price and inflation protections with this contract, too. So we think it's good for our customers, and we would welcome any questions or any further discussion at this point.
Yeah, I'm still trying to visualize how the power gets from Canada to your system. Is there one? Is a spider web of lines that cross from Manitoba? Is it one main big line that crosses from Manitoba? And where would?
Tom, do you want to deal with that?
I don't know the names of the transmission lines, but there's three main transmission lines that from Manitoba to the states, and it's in Minnesota and North Dakota.
Isn't one of them a 500 kV that was built
Yes.
in the early 70s from Minnesota right up into Canada? That was a major transmission construction. But, Commissioner Calk, you're
Yep.
right. At some point, there gets to be the system is sort of interconnected. But I think that transmission line and then the two others that Tom mentioned are the key.
Well, what I was thinking was that actually Carly and I were talking the other day about that, and this is not so much for this discussion, but a broader discussion about, is there some restrictions on bringing in Manitoba Hydro to North Dakota?
Oh, Commissioner, I'm aware of this, and I may not get all the facts correct, but I believe that there's not a restriction, but the law requires that if you get you first have to get approval from the commission for such a transmission line, and then it also has to be approved by the legislature.
In siting. So Otter Tail and MDU could go to the same kind of agreements without having any challenges. Okay. Fair. And then the last question, maybe not the last, hopefully the last, was you're requesting an ADP today, Advanced Determination of Prudence. Why? I mean, what is an ADP required on this case? Because it seems like you're not going to have to develop a lot of capital. Why not just make your own board of directors decision and take it and come back in a rate case? What benefit does an ADP give you today, give the customers today? Not you as a company.
Dave, I might ask you to take this. I think it goes back to a commitment from a previous rate case that we had.
A couple of things. We do have a commitment from our prior case to file ADPs with the commission for large enough generation or transmission investments.
When you say a commitment, was that, I don't remember, is that one of the provisions we put in the last rate case?
That was a provision in the settlement agreement that we reached actually in the 2007 filing, not the last case, but the one
prior. So prior to me actually getting here, okay.
So that's one of the reasons why we file ADPs, is this certainly was a large enough contract to qualify for, you know, that commitment. But then on the other hand, you know, this contract has a capacity portion, cost portion, that's that's, you know, going to be needed to be recovered in a future rate case. And so, you know, makes good sense for us to have the commission review that in advance and give us approval of that in advance. So that issue becomes not something that needs to be contested in a case down the road. So,
but if we don't grant ADP, it doesn't mean we don't think it's a good project.
Right. I mean, we understand that we can still then submit the those costs in the next rate case.
I was unaware that that was a requirement of the 2007 case. Okay. Thank you. I think that speaks volumes right there.
Fair. Alana, can you elaborate on that at all? Or were you here? Or
she was here.
Okay, I'm just trying to make a record.
There were substantial testimony and difference of opinion about rate recovery for certain generation projects. And I guess to simplify it, I mean, wind projects not in North Dakota, basically. Renewable projects not in North Dakota. And responding to other state mandates, that sort of thing. And it was a settlement then. The basis of the settlement and the basis, I think, for the commission agreeing with it was simply that if the staff and the commission had this upfront view at some of these projects earlier on through the ADP process before they're built and somebody's looking for rate recovery on them, that everyone would be better off having that information as early as possible. I think that's probably the basis, subject to Mike correcting me.
I think that's right. Rather than trying to recreate something 2 or 3 years later and try to remember what all the decisions were, and then arguing in a time period when, okay, natural gas rates were $2 when we built this thing then, now 3 years later it's $5, and we got to make our minds kind of twist around and think, well, what if it isn't at today's prices it was back then? Was it reasonable or not back then? It's just easier to do it up front.
And if I may, Commissioner, in related provisions of the settlement, we also agreed to file resource plans with the North Dakota Commission, giving advance of some of the investment decisions. And also we also agreed in the settlement to enhance or expand our 10-year plan report to include more projects, for example, transmission projects that aren't necessarily located in North Dakota, but that North Dakotans would be paying a portion of. Now we have a discussion of those in that 10-year plan as well, which we didn't used to do. So all of it in an attempt to try to provide the commission with information in advance on some of these large investments.
So you're complying with a previous settlement order. Okay, thank you.
When would this potentially be entered into it, agreement? If the commission would, let's just say, hypothetically approve this August 15th, how quickly would you act on something like that?
This, are you asking about this particular contract?
Yes.
This, and Tom, this contract is, could you give us the details of that?
It's effective April 1st, 2015.
April 1st, 2015.
So it's 2012 now.
Right. But I think that, you know, has it been inked and is there an obligation by, I think we're at that point, right, Tom?
Yes, this has agreement has been approved by both Manitoba Hydro and ourselves.
See, we would sign a contract potentially sometime this fall.
I think we've signed it. Okay. Commissioner, I'm sorry, I'm not being clear. Okay. Excuse me, Tom, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, we have signed the contract. We have signed the contract, yes.
Okay, fair enough.
But my follow-up question on that is, this was contingent, though, on Minnesota Commission approval. Where does North Dakota come in on that?
The, you know, that's a good question. I mean, we grapple with this all the time in terms of trying to secure resources for a system that serves customers in five states, where every cost recovery piece is decided separately by a regulatory commission in each one of those states. So, you know, in this particular case, we had that provision in there. You know, what would happen if we didn't get approval from one of our other states and we didn't get that cost recovery? I guess that maybe is kind of the crux of it. And
ADP not approval, because this is just
ADP. Or cost recovery. Yeah, this is an ADP cost recovery. And you know, I think we kind of edged up close to that in some of our resources that have come up recently. We haven't, I think we've done a good job of being able to show resource decisions that have been are good for all of our customers, North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota. But it is a challenge. I mean, not everything can happen simultaneously, so we kind of have to move through it some sequence, and we do face this challenge of how do we manage this interface with all of our regulatory bodies. I'm not answering your question. But we did not have that provision in the contract, but I think the reason is I Tom, as far as I know, we didn't have that provision in the contract. Is that right?
That's correct.
But all of by way of why we didn't, I was just trying to illustrate, I guess, the world we work in and how we try to navigate through that.
It's a management decision, a risk that you'll take. Well, 70% or whatever our business is in this state, and we need to keep going in discussions over here. Time is of the essence. We can't talk to every single stakeholder, and you're willing to take that risk if later down the road North Dakota says, no, we don't want to pay for this project.
And we kind of have to at some point, yep. Because otherwise we're stalled and we just can't go forward. Yep. So we have to do, I think you're pretty articulate on that. Kristen, thank you. There is a management decision about how do we step forward in the world that we work in here.
And let's face it, and staff understands this too. I mean, it's critical that we get the approvals of the large jurisdiction too. I mean, that's a critical first step. Bottom line, and yet we still try to coordinate all those approvals and do the best we can, but it is critical.
No, I think we appreciate candid discussion. Pat, did something that you want to step up to? Grab a mic, Pat. Yeah.
Just a follow-up to your question, I think, why, you know, if it's not going to be effective until July 1st of 2015, what are the reasons why it has to be done 3 years in advance?
Well, I guess part of the reason there is resource planning has a long time horizon, and you can't move anything quickly. Even a natural gas plant, you probably take, you know, probably the fastest you could get it going if you could buy your turbine right when you wanted it is a couple of years and maybe more if you had any siting difficulty. So I think that's the answer, Pat, is just we just have to make certain decisions with enough lead time so that this was great, doesn't require anything to be built, you're going forward, but if it wasn't the best answer and you had to build something, you need to start that decision-making early enough to allow time for that, too.
Is there a provision that you could go and request more power from this source down the road?
Yes, Commissioner, there is, and one of the provisions, I think,
more by energy.
I think both. I think actually the contract allows for both, and there's to get more capacity if Manitoba Hydro invests. If Manitoba Hydro can line up enough buyers, then they'll have the wherewithal to invest and build, I think, another section of dam and capacity up there. I think they've got a little bit of a chicken and egg thing, but I think we also have the provision in the current terms to buy more energy through the course of the term of the contract based upon provisions and definitions that are in the contract, and that would be a sort of a situation-specific decision that we would make. Do we want to? Are there other sources? Where can we get energy most cheaply?
Okay. Mr. Betts, do you have anything else?
Yeah, just can we look back at, again, at, I guess, slide 2, NSP system resource needs, 2010?
Okay.
You're talking about, and I'm also looking at the memorandum that I believe, Chris, you mm-hmm. Prepared. You know, you're talking about a gap or whatever, an implementation date in 2015 for this. But it looks like there's a gap in the blank space, the white space between the top red line that says total obligation and then the rest of the area. Is that what Manitoba Hydro fills the need? Is that what we're talking about? Because it looks like that gap, you're going to be short between 2013 and 2014.
Yes, Commissioner, good observation. Manitoba Hydro fills part of this gap out through starting 2014 out through 2025. It doesn't fill all of it. The contract extension, the rest of how we would fill that gap we'll make those decisions kind of case by case, but likely it would be natural gas fueled power plants. But you're right, the Manitoba Hydro contract extension doesn't fill that whole gap.
So 2015 is not that far in the future. You're actually having to, I mean, you're going to be needing to have something in place long before then.
Well, let me ask Steve Wishart. For 2015, is it true, Steve, that this extended contract does meet the need in 2015?
Yeah, I think when we look at that gap in the chart, it's a bit of a graphing convention that makes it look like we're going to be short in 2014. The data we had at the time showed that we had sufficient capacity through 2014, and our first identified need was in 2015. If you trace up on the graph straight up from 2014, you should see that the red line and the area below it coincide, showing no need in 2014, and the first big gap is in 2015. And I should elaborate, since then, we've had revised load forecasts, et cetera, and we feel very certain that we'll have sufficient resources through 2015 to meet our needs.
Thank you. That helps.
And this is Matt Loftus. If you look at Figure 7 of our application, that may actually give you a little bit more clear picture of our resources and the need going forward, and I think maybe that would be a little bit more representative, as Steve was saying, of how this contract will help fill that need.
So this is the application we'd submitted, and it's page what, Alana, of that? Page 29 of our application. Is that Figure 7? Was that what Matt said? Matt's our Commissioner Fetch. Matt Loftus is our attorney on this.
I don't think
so. Oh,
yeah, if you look at Figure 7, that'll show the updated, well, at the time that we submitted our December 1st update to our resource plan, we provided this chart that shows our resources in blue and then the need there in red, and the blue bars there already account for the extension of this Manitoba Hydro EPA.
And then narrative explains that. Thank you.
Okay, Laura, did you have anything else you wanted to present?
No, thank you, Commissioner.
Perfect. Chris, do you want to go through your memo?
If you'd like.
Well, I just...
I have nothing else further.
You don't? Well, then maybe just a couple questions for you then. So, I mean, I read through your memo and I've heard your questions. I mean, basically, from your viewpoint, what's your summation of the project?
Summation is it's good for ratepayers. It mitigates the risk from further natural gas development for NSP, who's already developing considerable natural gas resources, and allows us to kind of see how this new natural gas market plays out.
Okay. Fair enough. Mark, did you have anything?
Nope, I have nothing to add.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't have any other questions, Bonnie. Did you have
I don't any? Either. Thank you.
Any closing thoughts from anyone at all?
No, I apologize for the glitch at the beginning. And next time we come, we'll have multi-modes of presentation, paper as well as electronic.
To save the ratepayers' money is what you're trying to do.
Well, you know, we need to save time, too. So appreciate your forbearance on that.
Okay. Well, with that, I guess what I will, before we close it, I would anticipate we'll schedule a work session on this very quickly, and then we'll get this to a vote as soon as we can. Thank you for bringing this in front of us. I learned a few things today and just look forward to the continued discussion. And with that, unless Bonnie, do you have anything else?
I learned a lot today. Thank you.
All right. I'll close the informal on case number PU 1270. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.